good evening, everyone. It falls to me to try and give us a little bit of an introduction to machine learning and what we're going to talk about tonight. We have, obviously, some great people in the panel and some of the leading people in the field, actually in the audience, so I hope they'll forgive me for some of the shortcuts to try and do this in 15 minutes. Probably the easiest way to think about the promise of machine learning is it is very akin to the sort of fairy tale genie. It has the possibility of granting wonderful wishes, but the biggest issue is you have to be very, very careful what you ask for, because it will actually deliver that, and normally that's not really what you intended. So let's sort of take a quick canter through some of the ideas that people are talking about with machine learning. The impact of machine learning, I think it is valid to say, is going to be very profound. The analogy that people use that we had the Industrial Revolution that replaced muscle. You can argue that there was an IT revolution which started at the end of the 60s that replaced simple repetitive mental tasks, for example, calculating a payroll ledger, and that had a significant impact on the world. And now we're seeing a new type of revolution which is replacing what we might think of more advanced cognitive tasks. And that gives you a clue as to how broad the application area is here, in that we're talking about many roles that people undertake at the moment, but with the twist that obviously machines don't get bored, they can often deal with more information, they can be distributed, and actually, much to my surprise as someone who's worked in the area for a long time, they actually now outperform humans in some key areas in terms of accuracy. So what is machine learning? I've been doing machine learning since the late 1980s. I now say to my young colleagues who are doing it, before it worked is when I started. And the important thing to understand about machine learning is that problems are solved where the problem isn't actually explained to the computer in any way. So we don't work out what it is that makes a tree versus a bush, and tell the computer. It does it from experience. And the easiest way to understand that, for those of you that are new to the area, is there are two ways of learning French. You can learn French by being 16 and sitting in a classroom with a grammar book on French, or you can be 2.5 and live in Paris. And obviously, the latter tends to get you much better at French. You'll learn all of the realities of the idiom of the language and slang. But when you're 5 and you're asked why you've just constructed that sentence that way, you'll have very little idea. You just know French. And that's very much the situation here. Rather than trying to program a computer or create understandings of things which are semantic, modern machine learning is generally based on learning by example. And because of that, it has the power to learn all of the complexities and subtleties of the real-world problems. A lot of the problems before modern machine learning came along were really not solvable by machines. So a very simple example would be, we take arbitrary photographs and we ask a computer to tell us what's in the photograph. There's really very little amount of programming that could possibly get you very far in that, whereas now machine learning systems will give you a pretty good assessment of that. There was to give you an idea of the nature of the problem, even if we're just talking about a minor problem like, is it a cow or a horse? Obviously, those animals all come in different shapes and sizes. They can be facing you in different ways. There can be different lighting conditions. But also, the difference between a cow and a horse is actually very little, unless you're a cow or a horse. And one of the great sort of leaps that happened a couple of years ago was machine learning being able to deal with those sort of problems. And now we're actually in a situation where problems that were asymptotic, where the performance was getting better little by little, like speech recognition, we've had some quite significant leaps in very short amount of time. And one of the most fascinating things to me is that a recent set of papers claim to have speech recognition that's more accurate than humans. Now, I don't think that's quite been really validated yet, but if that turns out to be true, then that's a very interesting milestone that I didn't think was going to be passed. Other areas where we've seen significant leaps are computer vision and machine translation and even some areas of inference. So it is really a very significant change that's going on. If we move on to looking at the effect on society, one of the amazing things is I think back to the early days where the only people that would talk about this were myself and Chris Bishop, and you never had it discussed, you'd never see it in a newspaper or anything like that. And now, obviously, you can't open a newspaper without seeing commentary on machine learning. The difficulty is that much of the commentary doesn't understand some pretty fundamental aspects of machine learning because it is actually quite counterintuitive. And the danger is that that sort of ill-informed speculation is leading to things like regulation in a way that actually will not work. There are also lots of assumptions made. So, for example, the idea that machines couldn't show empathy or actually whether the machine's actually feeling it or not, it may well be quite possible to train things like that. So in the coverage at the moment, there are sort of three themes that we see. The first one is in commentary where we get a lot of things, even from really quite highly educated people about machines coming back from the future and killing us and all this sort of thing. The reason that that's interesting if you actually work in the field is that we really have very little to fear about that sort of problem at the moment. Putting aside the issue that actually we have far more to worry about evil people with machines rather than evil machines, it actually shows a misunderstanding of where the subject is. Where the great advances are being made at the moment is in what's called narrow AI. So this is the ability to take a relatively narrowly defined problem, like recognizing what's in a photograph, and being able to deal with that. There's a whole class of problems which is broad AI, which is basically dealing with anything that the world could throw at you. And to give you a simple example, a machine now could probably be as accurate as a fox in terms of telling you whether there's a rabbit in your garden. But if you were to try and build a fox with current AI, it would quickly get run over by the night bus because it wouldn't be able to deal with all of the generalities that an animal would have to deal with. And it's very easy to extrapolate from narrow AI to assume that we're going to make progress on the same basis in broad AI, and there's actually no scientific basis for assuming that those naturally fit together. It may come, it may not come, but we shouldn't really be confusing that with the current situation. Jobs and skills, we've got some commentary on some excellent reports coming up on that area. The jobs impact, I think, is likely to be significant. But more importantly, the required skills and the adaptability of the workforce is going to be significant. And one way of thinking of this is that some of the knowledge-based tasks in our society will be automated, but wisdom-based tasks are less likely to be affected. And then the last one is economic. These technologies are going to affect pretty much every area of commerce, and they're going to have significant effects on existing industries. So let's talk a little bit about the reality rather than all of the hype. So first of all, there's a lot of misunderstanding of the field, and it is very counterintuitive. So for example, you know, I'm forever reading things about, for example, people training machine learning algorithms who overclean their data and believe that everything must be cleaned in order to go into a machine learning algorithm. The reason that's important is the power of these algorithms comes from their ability to deal with the variation in the real world. And so actually the last thing you want to do is take out that variation. That's the real benefit. But we have a mindset where we've come from, which is about making sure, for example, we have very clean data, and we have very precise ideas and understandings. But actually, the power of these systems comes from the difference in that. The next one is that you can go and get a library, you can program up one of these things, and it reminds me very much of the neural network period in the late 80s where a lot of that was going on. But it's actually pretty useless, because if you don't know when that system will work and when it won't work, it's very hard to risk it in a real-world application. And so this is still an area where it hasn't become commoditized to the point where you can't have people with real skills working with it. That may come, but it's not there yet. And then one of the realities that we're going to see is a hype curve here. Already, every single startup asking for funding claims to be doing machine learning. 9 out of 10 of them are not doing any at all, and half of the remaining ones have no clue what they're doing. What that means is there will be a lot of money that gets wasted. Investors don't understand the difference between a very nice demonstration and a usable machine learning system. demonstrating something in the lab with machine learning is pretty much useless. Doing it by the side of the road in Peckham is what it's got to handle and all the variation. And again, we're not seeing people that really understand those differences. The skill sets are going to be quite different. Obviously, there will be some people that need to have the kind of mathematical signal processing skills that go into modern machine learning, but there will also be other areas where getting the best out of the algorithm may be about coupling that with some more human skills. The biggest problem that people don't understand in these problems is exception processing. If you're talking about two driverless buses, if any of you have ever been on that wonderful road along the Amalfi Coast where two Italian buses meet head-on, it is physically impossible under laws of physics for them to pass, but by a process of medieval Italian utterances, somehow they pass. There is no way a machine learning algorithm is going to manage that. And what that means is the whole of the Amalfi Coast will immediately grind to a halt if two autonomous vehicles meet. And there are countless examples. It's not about solving the problem. It's about dealing with the exception processing to make these things work. So it's really about understanding the limitations. Strategically, data is incredibly important. Machine learning needs data. Whoever gets the data first produces the best system. That means they get more data and they get a monopoly. And so it's very important we think about a concept which is very counter to us. We tend to think about open data. We actually need to think about strategic data. If we want the UK to be strong, how are we using our data? And if we're giving our data, what do we get back for it? Does the NHS get back products at good pricing because its data was used to create them? Mr. Putin claims that these technologies are going to be the basis of domination in the future, so viewed as being, you know, strategic in the true geopolitical sense. And of course, we're now seeing things like cyber attacks being based on machine learning, which is making them a lot more difficult. So on the economic front, we're going to see overinvestment. We're going to see some disappointment. We're going to need to see a skills base. And we're going to see big effects on other industries. When you've got machine learning, the ability to have imperfect prices in a market becomes very low. And so margins in many industries will be under pressure. Public services. Machine learning, I think, has great promise for some of our great challenges. For example, keeping early-stage dementia patients at home when they have some of the variations in cognitive level versus immediately blue-lighting them to the hospital so that you can spot and understand those situations would be a very nice example of that. An optimization of the use of existing infrastructure. Rather than build a piece of motorway, optimize how that's used in the traffic flows. Coming to the last few things, regulation. Probably one of the biggest enablers for machine learning is getting the insurance market sorted out. So if you look at the airline industry, it only works because there's an insurance framework that means it's actually possible to insure an airliner, even though one of them might go down over central London. And we're going to need to have an interesting insurance framework there because we don't have the precedent. So, for example, we know what human drivers do. Even if machine drivers are safer, if we don't have a legal insurance aspect to that. We also have issues around derived works. If my data is used to train an algorithm, do I own the algorithm? Heightening of issues. Surveillance. We may get very excited about CCTV surveillance, but if no one's looking at the cameras, it doesn't really matter. With machine learning, all the cameras will be looked at and can be analysed along with everything else. And so many of our current concerns will become much worse. One of the interesting examples of failure in regulation is the concept of explainability and fairness. So, for example, we have an algorithm that works out from data that Ruritanians are more likely to default on their mortgages. Is that acceptable? Well, it's not. Probably against the law. So how do we make sure that the decisions are being made on the right basis that don't take into account things that are culturally or legally unacceptable? And so the initial jump to that was the concept of explainability. So the algorithm has to be able to tell us why it made that decision. This is an example of a completely counterintuitive misunderstanding of problem. These problems are probabilistic. They're solved by taking a large amount of subtle information and coming to a conclusion. And so the illusion that we often have when we say why we made a decision doesn't work. When we make a decision, we do it in a very similar way most of the time, and then we post-justify it with something with relatively few variables, and, you know, I did it because of A, B, and C. And you can pretty soon, there's some very nice experiments that show that's not what you did. But these machines, of course, are doing the same thing. And the important thing to understand about explainability is it doesn't take very much mathematics to show that actually explainability works the opposite way. So people think that if something is explainable, it's more accurate. Actually, you can show that if something is explainable, it's either as accurate or less accurate than something that's unexplainable. So when you put it that way, how many people do you want to die in autonomous vehicle crashes so that you understand how it made its decision? That's the question we're being asked, and that's not something that regulators understand at the moment. They think it's going the other way. And so we have big problems like the generalized data protection rules, where this misunderstanding is leading to some rather bizarre questions. Culturally, machine learning holds up a mirror to us of ourselves. We shouldn't be upset that if you train a chatbot on the internet, it becomes a racist Nazi, because that's what it's reading. And we need to understand what we want when we ask the question. If we want it to behave like an internet chat room attendee, it will. We're also going to have a change culturally where, because of these technologies, there's going to be much less room in human society for hypocrisy. At the moment, we like to say we do one thing, but we actually do another. And as these technologies come in, that gap between the two, there's going to not be the possibility of doing that. And what does that mean we say about who we are and what we value and how we react? So it's going to change our view of us, because machine learning will be a mirror to us. And more importantly, we need to understand a probabilistic world. Really good drivers crash their car. Really good autonomous vehicle algorithms crash their car. Is the autonomous vehicle algorithm at fault? It's interesting, some of the statistics I've seen on some of the recent autonomous vehicles mean they drive like my father. By definition, it was always the other guy's fault, and that's now the case with autonomous vehicles. So in conclusion, we will go through a hype curve. We'll have lots of very bad machine learning systems that won't work. We'll have lots of promises that aren't delivered. But underneath all of that, there is a real revolution going on. I think we'll see the classic societal approach to this of underestimating how long the change will take, but also underestimating how deep the effect will be. And we need to prefer an ethical framework which actually operates in this new world. You know, Chris Bishop has a wonderful phrase which is embracing uncertainty, and that's what the probabilistic world is really about. So the genie is out of the bottle. It's not going to go back in, and we need to be prepared to think very differently in order to avoid the threats and grab the opportunities. Thank you.